I think of traditional IVF, what most people think of IVF is kind of industrial. Typically, the way most American centers work, I would say 99% of them, is we have this protocol, we're going to throw that protocol at you, and the hope is that you respond properly. And the most important part of what we do is not so much that we can succeed, but it's that we can learn from our failures. If you're working with a doctor in IVF and you failed twice, and the doctors are not giving you a good, clear explanation of why the failures are happening and what they would do differently going forward, time to change.
Welcome back to Healthy as a Mother. I'm your co-host, Dr. Leah Gordon, and this is the show for becoming and being a mother, where Dr. Morgan and I share the natural women's health and motherhood guidance you've been looking for through a fresh, functional, and balanced lens. Today, I am so excited to interview my personal IVF doctor, Dr. Chang from Hanabusa IVF. I did a lot of research and interviewed a lot of different clinics when we had to go through IVF for my husband and I's male factor infertility. And Dr. Chang was so special. He had such a different approach. He is a pioneer in mini IVF and really focuses on more holistic IVF approaches, really trying to understand the root cause, treat each woman as an individual. He takes time to come in on the weekends and whenever women need him based on their body and their hormones, as opposed to creating IVF like a factory where everything is just protocols and efficiency for the benefit of the clinic. I loved his approach on using minimal stimulation, and he has a spectrum from natural IVF with almost no medications to mini IVF to natural transfers, and also really unique situations based on whatever the woman is going through. He also specializes a lot in low ovarian reserve, so premature ovarian reserve if women have low egg count early in their life, and or advanced age if you're having lower ovarian reserve because sometimes the traditional IVF route doesn't work for you. I chose him even though I didn't have low ovarian reserve because I had high AMH. I had a high amount of eggs and I did not want to have an overstimulation situation with a normal IVF clinic. And I'm so glad that I chose him. I'm just so obsessed with him. I think he's amazing. And we have this really amazing, powerful interview. So let's get started. All right, Dr. Chang, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Of course. So I'm really excited because you were my IVF doctor, and people ask me all the time who I went to see, and I always have such great things to say about you, but I would love to be able to just interview you and ask a bunch of questions that I think a lot of my listeners have who are struggling with infertility and not really knowing what to do, and your approach is so different than so many. So can you start a little bit about just telling me about yourself, you know, what you want to say, and then kind of how your approach is different and why it's different than a lot of other clinics.
Let me see. When did I get into women's healthcare? This was way back in 1991. Okay, 1991,
wow.
Got into women's healthcare. But I started out as a generalist gynecologist obstetrician. And one thing about, I was actually, in my younger days, I was very discouraged about this whole field of infertility care, particularly IVF, because it was very, very cookbook. You know, I actually had a number of my fellow residents who were very bright. They ended up going to various fellowships. But everything that was coming out of their mouth was, you know, this is a protocol, this is a cookbook, you know, menu. Everything was being treated the same. It really, I just did not like it, you know. And but what happened was, through my career, hospitalist, had my own obstetrician gynecologist group. Eventually, my wife and I were trying to conceive, and we were struggling. And we went the IVF route. Turned out that in the office that I was using, there was not a young doctor, but a doctor new out of fellowship. His name was Dr. John Zhang, and he was practicing there, and he was promoting something called mini IVF. I've never heard about this, you know, before. Mm-hmm. And apparently he got this idea because he was friends with a doctor in Japan. His name is Dr. Osamu Kato, and Dr. Kato was had the largest IVF center in the world in Tokyo at that point. And because of various complications to his patients, he went this route of minimal stimulation, much less medications, because he was thinking that the medications were what caused the complications for his patients. And
yes.
Then Dr. Zhang was promoting this at this point. I'd never heard it before. I happened to be in the same office. I was actually, and I thought this was amazing, just some pills by mouth, kind of adjusting it for my wife's condition, egg retrievals under local anesthesia, and it resulted in our oldest son. And I thought that this was like so amazing. It was completely different from what I heard from other IVF centers. And because of that, I started volunteering on my days off to help him out. He was so overwhelmed because he ended up getting into the Wall Street Journal and people started asking him about this minimal stimulation. So eventually, he was pulling me in. There's no way I could deliver babies and do this as well because we were exploding. So I had to give up obstetrics and entered this whole field of infertility and promote many of these minimal stimulation, vitrification. That was something that we were doing way back when. Just a lot of things that were just seminal ideas. Just were pioneering work back then. And then this eventually led me to this point where I, New York's a tough place to raise kids, so I ended up coming out here to the West Coast and in San Diego, and then we started Hanabusa IVF, working with some international partners that were trying to help their patients from Asia to with surrogacy and egg donation here. But I was able to kind of start promoting minimal stimulation in the West Coast.
That's amazing. I know that's how I found you, is that I, you know, going through IVF was more male factor, and I knew about hyperstimulation for people who had high egg count like I did, and I had found your name online somewhere because you were kind of a pioneer in mini IVF, and I kind of did a deep dive and was like, I have to meet you. And I had already interviewed a couple other IVF doctors, and I don't know, I felt like a number there. And when I met you, I didn't. I was like, I really felt like you saw me and you respected me and we shared similar philosophies on things. And so, you know, when you're taking that next step to try to create your family through IVF, it can be so scary, it's so expensive. And so, I don't know, I love you. I love everything you do. I love sending patients to you. So can you tell our listeners what you talk a lot and what really got me interested when I met with you is you mentioned about higher quality eggs versus higher quantity. Can you speak to that a little bit? Is that something that IVF, that mini IVF is about, or is that more your personal philosophy? And what does that mean? How does that look in like the logistics of egg retrieval?
Yes. I think of traditional IVF, what most people think of IVF is kind of industrial. It's kind of like the industrial fruit farm. You know, you're trying to create as many fruits as possible out of your fruit trees and get them to taste as good as possible. But we also know that they're never going to be as good and tasty as the ones from someone's backyard garden or a smaller farm. And there's a limit, there's a problem with that industrial approach. So this is where, and then we also realize that many women they fare poorly with this approach as well, you know. Mm-hmm. And even though maybe from a certain women this will statistically optimize things for them, at the same time, is it really worth the trade-off if it's going to affect their health? So this is where minimal stimulation comes in. It's not, how should I say it? It's not that it's any better, it's just different and you can apply it in different manners, you know. So where works really well is for women with low ovarian reserve. They don't have, you know, a farm full of eggs there. They have a little backyard garden. And if you apply that water and fertilizer that you would use for a farm, and you apply it to your backyard garden, you're going to flood and destroy and damage everything. So the idea behind minimal stimulation or just customizing your protocol is to adjust it based on the situation. You know, and as I said, if someone really doesn't have any egg problems, but maybe they just want to avoid the complications of using so much medication, well, you could adjust it. Yes, maybe instead of 6 perfect eggs, I make only 4 perfect eggs. But for some patients, it's worth the trade-off. If you don't have to get really sick, you don't have to use, you know, 30 injections in the cycle. You can use, you know, 5 or 6 injections in the cycle. But it's adjusting for the situation. It's customizing the protocol. And you'll hear of many centers saying, we customize and we adjust the protocol, but they're adjusting traditional IVF protocols, just this high stimulation. So we're, maybe we're using one less medication here, one less injection there, but it's never going to be, oh, you have the option of doing this natural IVF or a low complexity with this pills or a mini IVF. But that's what we do here. We customize and we try to approach each patient individually, whether it's medically or just a personal issue when it comes to the IVF process.
I love that. And when you talk about like natural IVF, I think that's confusing. Like, what's the difference between natural IVF, mini IVF, natural transfer, yeah, a medicated transfer? Can you just break that down for people who a lot of these words can seem so overwhelming? Like, what is it that we're talking about?
Yeah, so IVF is a spectrum. Like, well, for most centers, it is. So for most centers, which most of your listeners are probably aware of, what are we thinking about? It's 1, 2, 3 weeks of taking hormonal pills ahead of time, like birth control pills, estrogen, progesterone, maybe even human growth hormone or steroids, testosterone. Then you're going into a cycle where you're getting 2 different injections to stimulate your hormones. And you'll be doing that for anywhere from 12 to 14 days, trying to push and push. And then you, because you have so many eggs, there's a tendency to ovulate early because it's all based on your hormones anyway. So you need a 3rd injection to be able to stop you from ovulating early, which you're going to be doing for 5 or 6 days. And then you need another medication injection to release your eggs because your natural pituitary LH surge is not functioning at that point because you're taking something to stop you from doing that. So you're talking about 20, 30, 40 injections over 2+ week period. You know, this is $5,000, $7,000, $10,000 worth of medication. And it can work, but it works in an ideal situation. Typically a woman, you know, less than 35 with 15, 20, 30 eggs available. And, but people can get very, very sick from the whole process. So with these lower stimulation protocols, you know, they're different. You apply them in different situations. The first IVF cycle the first successful IVF cycle 40 years ago was a natural cycle. There was no medications given. And basically the doctors were functioning like a baseball player trying to catch a pop fly. You were just trying to catch the egg at the right moment. And it works, but it's not the most efficient process, but at the same time, it can work. That's how the first IVF cycle came along. Mm-hmm. What happened was, this all happened in England. In America, the doctors couldn't reproduce this. So this is where all these medications came into play. But what we can do is from natural, which could be no medications and just catching the egg, we could control the ovulation a little bit with some medication. Then there's another level up, which we call it a low complexity cycle, where we're taking just pills. The pills will give you maybe a 2nd or 3rd egg. Many of your patients will be doing that through time intercourse cycles. And in a case like ours, instead of just, well, you're going to try on your own, we can actually pull those eggs out under local anesthesia. Or you could do like a mini IVF cycle where you're doing pills by mouth to stimulate your brain and then injections to stimulate directly. It's not that much different from the intrauterine inseminations, the IUI cycles that are being done. And, right. You know, maybe you get 4 or 5 eggs. And the retrieval, since there's much fewer eggs there, the taking the eggs out doesn't become such a painful experience and can be performed under local anesthesia if the patient would prefer, which is nice because you can avoid starving yourself the night before, avoid being hungover afterwards, and you avoid having to pay another $500 or $1,000 for the anesthesiologist, which is usually bundled into the IVF fee anyway.
Right.
So, and then, you know, like I said, the classic Japanese mini IVF is the pills and every other day injections. And then what I like to do default to is something called a mini antagonist cycle, which is similar to what you traditionally do with a traditional IVF cycle, but it's just brought down much less. And we're always testing hormones to make sure that we're not overwatering or over-fertilizing the plants, so to say it. Yeah.
And now a quick word from our sponsor. We've partnered with Needed to bring you this episode. Stress is something that many people can experience along the fertility journey, and it's something that influences how they handle oxidative damage. That's why supporting overall cellular health can be super valuable at any stage along the fertility journey. One product I personally love recommending is Needed's Egg Quality Support. I helped contribute to formulating this product, but even if I hadn't, I would still be confident recommending it because it's so great. It's designed to provide antioxidant and mitochondrial support with ingredients like L-carnitine, green tea extract, ALA, and PQQ. I also love pairing it with Needed's comprehensive prenatal and their CoQ10 for a comprehensive approach. Visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Again, visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Okay, back to the show. And so is that not common practice? Because, you know, I have worked with you. I think I did the mini IVF. I also did egg retrieval with just local anesthesia. So it's hard for me. Like, I work with patients, obviously, but I don't have the inner workings of every clinic of the patients that I see. Is that not common practice to adjust and check hormones throughout the process and adjust medications ongoing like you do, or is that common practice?
It's very uncommon, and this is something that's coming more from Asia and Europe as opposed to the States. Typically, the way most American centers work, I would say 99% of them, is we have this protocol, we're going to throw that protocol at you, and the hope is that you respond properly. And in what, you know what, 80, 85% of the time, you'll have a decent response. The problem is that 15, 20% of the time, that the response is not ideal. Then in that situation, it becomes a struggle. What do you do next, you know? So, but what we do very differently is we are measuring not just by looking at estrogen and eggs, but we're specifically looking at a hormone called FSH, follicle stimulating hormone. The doctors usually will test this maybe one time at the beginning, intermittently, maybe through your process, but never in the cycle itself. But what we've learned from the Japanese doctors is that there is this window of FSH that is ideal for egg development. If it's too low, the eggs may struggle to develop fully. They may not be perfectly mature. If it's too high, it's like overwatering plants. You know, we know, all amateur gardeners know, you water a plant too much, it's going to die. And the same thing holds true with FSH. The data, I still don't understand why the American doctors have not kind of embrace this at all when it's being done in Europe and Asia all the time, but I guess it's that idea that, look, it works most of the time for us. Why bother with it? You know, it does change everything drastically because of the fact that now you're measuring another test. You need to interpret something different. It's a lot more work than I think typically what most centers are doing, and it does make it much more difficult to be efficient in the process. And I think right now everything's about efficiency, cost efficiency, you know, time efficiency. Mm-hmm. Trying to make it easier on doctors themselves to see more patients. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of thought. You know, every time I get those results, trying to interpret what's the next step.
Yeah. Well, I love that you do that work. And So this is something I have a hard time with, because in my mind, everyone I see, I'm like, just go to see Dr. Chang. And I know not everybody can do that because of, you know, proximity of time and space, even though people can come and stay. Is there anything people can do to ask their IVF doctor, like, hey, are you willing to do this? Or is it something they wouldn't even know? They'd be like, I don't even know what you're talking about.
You know what? Oddly, unfortunately, it is something where, number one, most of these doctors really, even if they tried, they might be open to it, but it, unless you've had practice and you've done this and you've been educated on it, you're not going to do it correctly. Like, I've heard, you know, there's a lot of centers right now saying we do minimal stimulation, mini IVF, but it isn't mini IVF. It's mini IVF in the sense that you're adding an oral medication like Clomid or letrozole to the cycle to stimulate your brain. But what they're doing is they're laying her on top of their traditional IVF cycle and just pushing it. There's a doctor I know who actually really believes in minimal stimulation but hasn't been trained that way. And she does it, but when the minimal stimulation, she doesn't do all the testing and whatnot, and when it fails, she ultimately defaults to a high stimulation protocol, as opposed to, because she just doesn't have the data. She hasn't tested everything that needs to be done. She just doesn't understand, you know, why a cycle fails. And I think one thing that we, you know, I think the most important part of what we do is not so much that we can succeed. Everybody can succeed to a point, but it's that we can learn from our failures. You know, this is not 100%. This is going to work every time. If anything, it's a coin flip. If you succeed, that's great. You know, that's easy enough. But if you fail, you have to learn from your failure, or else you're going to just repeat the same thing over and over again.
Right. Yeah, I love that. And so your approach to egg retrieval is very different. And I know you've also talked about this with me and with patients I've sent to you around the uterine environment. And you also have talked about doing a curettage or scraping the uterus. You find that that can be helpful. Can you speak to that, what that means? And is that a common practice, or is that also not common practice for the IVF world?
Yeah, you know, so one of the things that have always bothered me is this term infertility of unknown origin. You know, the doctors will default to that all the time. We don't really have an idea. But you know what's interesting is, if they're not certain why, you know, with most medicine, you create a differential. You said, well, I don't know what the problem is, but I'm going to make a list of things that I'm going to look at, and we're going to try to go through this and solve it. And that's how we approach things here. We don't say simply this is an infertility of unknown origin. We come up with ideas of, well, why is this happening? You know, right. And many times the doctors will blame the egg, but there's a lot more to this whole process than the egg. And this is where, yes, a doctor puts in, an embryo has been created. Maybe the doctor has tested. They've done PGT, pre-implantation testing. Hopefully you'll just explain all this to your viewers. And then they transfer the embryo and it fails. And for some reason, the immediate reaction to them is, oh my, the embryo is probably imperfect. Let's do the same thing over again. To me, that doesn't make any sense. You know, if you tested and it was supposed to be ideal, don't you need to look at other things? Do we need to think that the uterine environment is imperfect? We know that the saline ultrasound, or you'll hear SIS or hysterosonogram, it's like 85 to 90% accurate, which means it's pretty good, but at the same time, you're gonna miss 10 to 15% of abnormalities that will prevent you from getting pregnant. So right. This is where, you know, are we missing something? Do we need to clean out the uterus as opposed to simply say, the uterus looks clear? If someone is, you know, there's been a lot of controversy over this whole mock cycle and doing endometrial receptivity array testing or Receptiva testing. And yes, the data says that maybe 95% to 99% of the time it doesn't make a difference. So a lot of doctors have not been doing these tests anymore. But, well, if you have a failure of a good embryo going in, well, maybe you have to explore that a little bit. And true, you may risk over-diagnosing, over-testing, but you've already had a failure at that point. Maybe we should be over-diagnosing, over-testing. And then another thing that comes up is environment. What is the situation? Oh, patient gets pregnant, they miscarry. You know, if they miscarry a second time, well, it's bad luck. If they miscarry a third time, oh, it's more bad luck. It's just the embryo. I can't tell you how many times I've seen that happen. And I'm thinking to myself, well, is it possible that the body is rejecting this embryo and maybe we need to do something about it? I had a patient, my God, she only told me about 10 miscarriages. But she's certain that there was even more chemical pregnancies, early miscarriages that she didn't even bring up. And
right.
And her doctors were thinking, you know, they didn't do anything different. You know, they didn't even give her, you know, there's some studies that say a low dose aspirin would help a situation like that. So, you know, we were planning to do IVF, you know, because she was like in her, you know, mid 40s. We're planning to do IVF just to make sure that the embryo, that the pregnancy would be at least chromosomally normal before we transferred it. But she gets pregnant, and what do I do? Just give her medication with the idea that maybe there's something about her body that's going to reject the pregnancy. And lo and behold, finally, after 10 plus miscarriages, she had a baby. I didn't
wow.
do anything except just give her some, two pills and a shot, I think. Well,
yeah.
She took it for a while. She took it for 3 or 4 weeks. But
right.
it's her idea of breaking it down that, look, there's more to it than just the egg. There could be sperm. You know, that's another thing that I haven't looked into. There could be the uterine environment, the tubal environment, you know. There's a lot of different things, and trying to make a differential. There's no, yes, this might be unexplained, but how do we explain it? How do we narrow
yeah.
things down?
Did you know proper hydration and mineral balance are key for hormone health, fertility, and preparing for pregnancy? This is why Dr. Morgan and I love Relight by Redmond's, the real salt people. A USA-made electrolyte powder with unrefined sea salt, over 60 trace minerals, plus bioavailable forms of potassium, calcium, and 2 forms of magnesium, malate and glycine. These minerals support hormones, hydration, energy, and overall health. The best part is they taste delicious. I'm really picky about how things taste, and so you can rest assured this is Dr. Leah approved. I love lemon lime, but I know Dr. Morgan is a strawberry lemonade gal. Head to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% off your order of electrolytes, real sea salt, natural toothpaste, and so much more. Again, head to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15%. Happy hydrating on your womanhood and fertility journey. Yeah, I love that. I mean, that's why I love your approach, because that's my approach, right? I'm not a reproductive endocrinologist doing IVF, but that's what we do, is looking for what is the root cause of what's going on and how do we look at this environment and how things are better. And, you know, I think I have kind of a good taste in my mouth about IVF because I came to you. And in my mind, I'm like, this is surely how everyone's experience is. And then the more I work with patients when other IVF clinics, it just doesn't seem to be the case. And so it is shocking to me. And a lot of the time I am teaching people like, no, I don't think that's normal. I know you allowed me to do a natural transfer going off of my own ovulation. Can you speak to that a little bit on the difference between a person going in to do IVF where they give you hormones to kind of like control the whole transfer cycle versus going off your own ovulation? And is that, again, something that's not very common?
Yeah, it's up to recent, maybe about 2-3 years ago, if someone created some embryos and they were frozen and they wanted to bring those back into the body, what we call an embryo transfer, the typical process would be, well, we're going to give you medications to stop your hormones. It could be birth control pills or a medication called Lupron to induce a artificial menopause. Then we're going to build up your environment by using synthetic estrogens, you know, and then mimic ovulation by giving you progesterone and then transferring the embryo a week later. And those progesterones are often big shots. But that doesn't have to be the way to do things. You know, many of our patients have normal cycles. It may not be anything to do with, you know, like you said, it may nothing to do with the woman. The woman may not have the fertility issue. It might be the man having a fertility issue. Why should you be treating the female part as a person with infertility? So this is where natural cycles, you know, you just follow the natural rhythm of the body. You can let the patient ovulate, or you can induce ovulation with one shot and then transfer the embryo appropriately whenever it needs to go in.
Mm-hmm.
It's less predictable. You know, nature is not the most predictable things. And yes, we may want to may end up canceling a cycle because things are not perfect. Typically, we can usually predict if the cycle is not perfect. So it's not like, oh, nature is worse and we're going to have a lower success rate. It's just you may end up getting cycles more canceled more often. So this was something that we had done way back in New Hope for a long time. There is an inconvenience to it from a doctor's standpoint. I don't know when that transfer is going to happen. It could happen on the weekend. If there's many centers that don't do procedures on certain days over the week, like Sundays. Sundays, like, don't do anything on a Sunday, or sometimes you never do anything on the weekends. That's where many centers program. They adjust, they manipulate the cycle so that everything happens during the business week. But that's not right. That's not natural. The interesting thing about this is that there's more and more studies have showed that maybe natural cycles for an embryo transfer is actually better for the pregnancy, that you have lower blood pressure issues, less issues with the growth of the baby. And now it's interesting seeing a lot of other centers are starting to do natural cycles or modified natural cycles, which is, and it's nice, but it doesn't work for everybody. You know, there's going to be certain people that it just doesn't work. But the idea is now you have options. Now there's another tool that you can use, as opposed to this is the only, I have a sledgehammer and I'm going to, I could do some smash things or put a tack in with the same tool. Now we could be a little bit more precise.
Yeah, I love that. I did a natural transfer with both of mine because it was a good option for me. And it makes sense to me if you're able to, because there's so many other factors going into becoming pregnant, staying pregnant, that's not just synthetically manipulated. So I think that, you know, for someone who's able to, I think that makes a lot of sense personally. I know you have a procedure to get to soon, so we can wrap up. I just want to ask if there's anything else, if you're like, I have a huge audience of people that I want to tell something to, like, what would you say, whether about IVF, something that you wish everyone knew before starting or doing it, or is there anything that if you have this window to speak to so many women and couples, like, would you say anything?
Yeah, I would say that, I guess in this brief moment, if you're working with a doctor in IVF and you failed twice, and the doctors are not giving you a good, clear explanation of why the failures are happening and what they would do differently going forward, it's time to change. It's nice to say we're going to be committed to the doctor, give them multiple chances, it'll increase my success rate. But once you've had two failures, there's usually, you know, unless they're giving you a clear idea that we're doing radical things differently in the future, it's time to change. It's very frustrating for me to hear patients coming in to see me, oh, the doctor really, you know, I always ask this thing, well, what was the doctor going to do differently for your next chance? And then they would be like, no, the doctor didn't say they were going to do anything differently. They just kind of repeated the same thing over again. Most frustrating thing I hear all the time, you know, along with the doctors didn't have any ideas of, you know, why I wasn't getting pregnant in the first place.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I find it frustrating playing the supportive role with people in clinics where I feel like the clinic is the problem. And I'm just like, what do we do about this? So I love your approach. I know you're a very busy person. I'm so grateful that you gave me space between your appointments. I'm so excited for you to go help other people have their babies. So just as an ending, how can people find you, work with you? Anything that you want to say?
Yeah, I mean, I do have a website, you know, I'm in, you know, you can find me through the typical routes at hanabusaivf.com. And I do have a specialty, you know, what happens is with minimal stimulation works very well with a condition called diminished ovarian reserve, where the fewer eggs, traditional IVF doesn't work very well with that. There's actually very good studies. Even the doctors will tell you IVF doesn't really work well. But when they say IVF doesn't work well, they're talking about traditional high stimulation. A lot of my focus is on diminished ovarian reserve, premature ovarian failure. But because of minimal stimulation and alternative protocols, you know, we can do everything here. You know, if a patient just prefers not using medication, you know, we can do that. If the patient prefers, wants to avoid, you know, wants to do it in a certain manner, we can adjust because we have the tools where most centers don't have the tools. But that's the, you know, that's my center. You know, our philosophy is very different. My hope and dream is that I can educate other doctors to kind of do this as well. Unfortunately, I have a lot on my plate right now, and it's going to be a while before I get to a point that I can teach other people to do this.
Yeah, amazing. Well, I hope that you're able to do that one day too, because I think this more holistic approach to IVF is needed, especially as the infertility epidemic is just blowing up and it's becoming such a crisis. And, you know, it's just the things that people go through with failed cycles and all the things is just, it's heartbreaking. So I hope that one day you can share, but I know you're doing the great work. You helped me have both of my children who I love so much, and I'm so grateful to you always. I will let you go do your next appointment, but thank you for being on the podcast, Dr. Chang.
You're welcome. It's nice seeing you again.
If you are on the infertility journey and you are considering IVF, or you are grappling with this idea, maybe you aren't wanting to do it yet, but it might be a future thing down the line, and you're just not really sure what to do to optimize your body so that maybe you have a better outcome in getting pregnant, in having healthier pregnancies and healthier babies, I have an entire course and support on this inside of Womanhood Wellness, my membership. And if you are still on the naturally trying to conceive journey, I have amazing resources for you too. But I wanted to create an integrative IVF option because I wanted that information when we went through the IVF process. I wanted to do it as healthy as possible. I wanted to optimize my husband and myself as much as possible. So in my course and my support, I break down on what to do to optimize before egg retrieval, how to detox the hormones and all of the things after egg retrieval, and then how to optimize and prepare before you do an embryo transfer. I explain different concepts, things that you're not going to learn in your IVF appointment, and I give you the natural medicine support, actionable, actual protocols on which supplements, what lifestyle things, and then you join this amazing community of women who are on the path toward becoming a mother, where you have support along that process. You're able to ask me questions monthly, and it's just an incredible group of women and amazing resources that you're just not getting anywhere else. So head to womanhoodwellness.com and you can join there and get all of the resources that you need for your infertility journey. Again, that's womanhoodwellness.com. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and share with a friend who would benefit from this content. Please remember that the views and ideas from this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis and treatment of any disease. Consult with your provider before integrating any of this information into your own healthcare plan. A healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.